It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and welcome to our continuing coverage of the coronavirus health crisis. I'm Bill Price. House vote on relief package.
We will have a strong bipartisan vote.
That is where we're going to start this Friday at noon. The U.S. House expected to pass that historic $2.2 trillion relief package that passed the Senate earlier this week. The measure aims to get money into the hands of individuals, businesses, and the healthcare industry in the midst of the coronavirus outbreak.
This legislation represents a bipartisan resolve to meet the coronavirus challenge head on. It represents a focus on families and workers.
House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, Texas Republican Kevin Brady.
Today's vote is about saving lives and livelihoods, providing the urgent relief needed to keep workers on the job, helping those who have lost theirs, and preserving Main Street businesses so they can ride out this crisis and rebound strongly.
Because of coronavirus concerns, House members will be brought into the chamber in small groups to cast their vote today. President Trump says he'll sign it into law as soon as he can. The U.S. now has more coronavirus cases than any other country in the world, with more than 86,000 reported cases and a death toll north of 1,300, health officials scrambling to get the upper hand.
The hospitals look like a war zone.
That's Dr. Ibad Youssef. He's with the Brookdale Hospital in Brooklyn, New York. He says emergency rooms in the Big Apple overwhelmed with sick patients.
People lining up out of the hallway through the EMS bay, through the ambulance bay, with masks on themselves, with oxygen on their nose, with oxygen on their face.
Dr. Youssef says to relieve the overcrowding, folks are being moved to other facilities. These nurses work at Mount Sinai Medical Center in Manhattan.
People come in, they die. The cycle repeats.
It's just a catastrophe.
The U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams says this week was the worst week for New York City. He expects next week to be better.
We're hopeful that next week New York will start to come down because, again, their cases have started to level off. And that's because they've been aggressive about their mitigation efforts. We see that the places that have been aggressive about staying at home, about keeping under groups of 10, have been successful. But we also see hot spots like Detroit, like Chicago, like New Orleans, that will have a worse week next week than what they had this week.
President Trump, meantime, has sent a letter to the nation's governors detailing plans to get parts of the country up and running by Easter.
We have to go back. This is the United States of America.
Mr. Trump says with a record 3.3 million Americans filing for unemployment benefits last week, the nation's economy cannot afford to wait any longer. So the White House will now categorize every single county in America as either high, medium, or low when it comes to the risk of COVID-19.
We may take large sections of our country that aren't so seriously affected, and we may do it that way.
The president says we can fight the coronavirus and get back to work at the same time. Dr. Deborah Birx sits on the president's coronavirus task force. She says local county health departments need to wait for more information, though, from the federal government before they can mark their risk level.
This will be critical for our future as we work together to really understand where the virus is and where it isn't in real time.
Dr. Birx says the rollout of the virus will take place in stages, and it's going to be up to local officials as to what stage they are in. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson tweeting today that he tested positive for the coronavirus.
I've developed mild symptoms of the coronavirus, that's to say a temperature and a persistent cough.
Johnson says he's staying away from people and he's still able to lead the country.
I am working from home, I'm self-isolating, and that's entirely the right thing to do, but be in no doubt that I can continue, thanks to the wizardry of modern technology, to communicate with all my top team, to lead the national fight back against coronavirus.
Earlier this week, the heir to the British throne, Prince Charles, also tested positive for the virus. Southwest Airlines cutting 1,500 daily flights as the coronavirus slashes demand for air travel. The cuts took effect today and amount to a 40% reduction in flights for the nation's biggest domestic carrier. With a lot of stores closed and supermarkets jammed, a lot of folks are buying stuff online. So, what's life like for people doing the delivering?
It's just like Christmas time, maybe a little bit more.
That's UPS worker Joseph Ozinski. He says since the coronavirus restrictions have been in place, he's seen a sharp increase in the number of folks ordering online.
My normal stops are like 150 a day, so it's like 300 packages a day, 350.
Ozinski says all employees in the package delivery business are being told to wear gloves and to avoid contact with people. Still to come this Friday, the latest on the coronavirus fight in New York and Pennsylvania, teacher cuts in Rochester, stocking streams in PA, and the birthday in Big Flats.
Well, good afternoon to all. The weekend is upon us. There is going to be rain, though it's not a complete washout. I'll be back with forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Thank you, Kevin. Checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania, Friday, March 27th. Health officials in Monroe County, New York, coming up with a game plan today to help prepare hospitals in Rochester for the potential surge in patients because of COVID-19. The numbers continue to rise daily in nearly every single county in New York.
We know that our local hospitals are well prepared. They are doing a great job. But at the same time, it is also possible that there will be additional staffing needs.
Chris Bell is executive director of the Monroe County Medical Society.
We want to be prepared in the event that there are needs at any point in the healthcare delivery system, that we have volunteers in place who are trained and capable of taking care of patients.
This morning, health officials outlined plans to meet the growing treatment demand for sick patients at hospitals all throughout the area. Education officials say it'll most likely be up to the local school districts as to when and if school reopens this year. Both New York and Pennsylvania have waived the 180-day instructional rule. That means under law, kids don't even have to return this year.
Every educator that I've talked to, I think across the state, wants to get back to it. They're anxious to figure out how best to connect with every student.
Nathan Maines with the Pennsylvania School Board Association says long-distance learning varies across the Commonwealth, and not every child is plugging in.
You've got kids that have tremendous amounts of technology in the home to kids that have no online access whatsoever, that frankly, the only time they were able to get online is at the school where they can't go currently.
Maine says he's also concerned a lot of kids aren't being fed because they aren't in school. Hundreds of districts all across New York and Pennsylvania have been collecting food to give to children they normally feed when school is in session. Rochester School Superintendent Terry Dade says close to 200 teaching jobs on the chopping block in the Flower City. That district working to close a projected $60 million budget deficit next school year.
I just want to make it clear that this is not fun for me. I wish I was some of my predecessors who got to talk about investing in and adding to, but we're just not in that period of RCSD history.
The new layoffs on top of the 100 teaching cuts that took place last December. Terry Dade says the district needs to right-size itself. Adam Urbanski is head of the Rochester Teachers Association. He says at a time when families are dealing with the coronavirus, they shouldn't have to deal with this too.
So it's a terrible blow for our students, and it's devastating to the teachers who may be affected.
The Rochester City School District has requested more than $30 million in emergency aid from New York State. At this point, there's been no indication from Albany that the money is coming. Let's head to Albany, where the clock is ticking on a state budget. The $178 billion spending plan due April 1st. Governor Cuomo says the coronavirus isn't making the process any easier.
In the middle of all this, we have to balance a budget. So how do you do a budget when you have expenses going out and a loss of revenue.
Cuomo says the virus could cost the state $15 billion. He's been critical of the $2 trillion relief package poised to pass Congress today.
It's earmarked only for COVID virus expenses, which means it does absolutely nothing for us in terms of lost revenue to the state.
Cuomo says under the relief package, New York City would get just over $1 billion in coronavirus funding. He says that's a drop in the bucket to what the Big Apple needs. In Pennsylvania, Governor Tom Wolf says $50 million on the way to buy medical equipment and supplies to help curb the spread of COVID-19.
I am working to get this funding moving as quickly as I can. I want to thank our state legislature for moving so quickly on this.
Wolf says the money will help protect those on the front lines of the fight against the virus. Buffalo area transportation has stopped collecting fares to help stop the spread of COVID-19. Family Life's Dee Haley.
The Niagara Frontier Transportation Authority is temporarily suspending fare collection on buses, trains, and paratransit lines as of today. NFTA officials say they want to avoid the spread of coronavirus on money or fare cards, and for the same reason, they're asking people to use the rear door to get on or off buses. Those with special needs or mobility issues may still use the front doors. This change was approved by the NFTA Board of Commissioners at yesterday's board meeting. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
The Red Cross facing a severe blood shortage because of the coronavirus.
This is going to end up in almost an unprecedented level of blood supply if we're not careful.
Canceled blood drives all across the country because of health concerns from the virus causing the shortfall. Officials say they've put in new measures to reassure the public that blood donation is a safe process even amid the health crisis. Pennsylvania wildlife officials are stocking rivers, lakes, and streams all across the Commonwealth in preparation for the opening day of trout season. But as Family Life's Terry Diener tells us, it's a much different feel this year.
This year, the year of the coronavirus, the tradition has taken on an entirely new feel. Gone are the caravans of trucks, SUVs, and cars that normally trail behind the stocking trucks. In 2020, in response to the need for social distancing and home confinement for the public to slow the spread of the coronavirus, it has stopped sportsmen's clubs, Boy Scouts, and community groups, as well as others, from taking part. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
And it was an unforgettable birthday yesterday for one boy from Big Flat. Dominic Cardinal turned 13 on Thursday, and even though he couldn't celebrate in person with his friends, they lined up in a parade of cars outside of his house for his big day.
At first I didn't know what it was, but like then I saw people sticking their heads out of the cars, and then they started giving me cards and stuff when they came back around.
Cardinal says he's grateful for the gesture.
It's pretty special because right now is a time where you can't see him. You can only talk to him virtually or digitally, so it's nice to see him, even though like you can't get close to him.
The teenager's mom says his son will remember this birthday for the rest of his life, not because of COVID-19, but because of his great group of friends. Speaking of great, Drew Brees once again proving why he's one of the good guys. Sunny time, 2 minute drill.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, let's start with some good news. Drew Brees, when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, he stepped up, pitched in, had a lot of homes built. Now he's doing it again. He and his wife are making a massive donation to fight against the coronavirus. Brees tells the NBC Today show that he and his wife, Brittany, are donating $5 million to the state of Louisiana this year.
There are so many people in need right now, and obviously the state of Louisiana thrives on small businesses, and we're a hospitality state. So many people have been affected by this around the country, but especially in New Orleans.
Bree says the effort will begin to distribute more than 10,000 meals a day in the state through partnerships with many groups like Jimmy John's. The Super Bowl winning quarterback adds that the efforts will continue into the foreseeable future.
When Brittany and I think about one of New Orleans' people's greatest or just basic needs, that is to make sure that they and their family are fed and that they can continue to sustain.
Gotta love Drew Brees. Some baseball news: players and teams are said to agree on a deal that will allow players to keep their service time should the 2020 season be called off because of the pandemic. If there is a 2020 season, both sides are open to playing more doubleheaders and having the season run into November with the potential of playing neutral site playoff games in an effort to squeeze as many games in as possible in Major League Baseball. For the first time since 1945, the Indianapolis 500 will not take place on Memorial Day weekend. The storied race has been postponed until August 23rd. The annual open wheel event was originally scheduled for May 24th. And UFC light heavyweight champion Johnny Bones Jones has been arrested in Albuquerque, New Mexico, on multiple charges, including suspicion of driving while intoxicated. The 32-year-old was found in the driver's seat of a parked car, and according to police, displayed signs of intoxication with a half-empty bottle of liquor in his presence, a handgun also found. Jones later released from custody. Praying for that brother. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphier.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, the Capital Connection crew tackles the coronavirus. Plus, at the end of today's broadcast, having trouble coping with COVID-19? Try cleaning your house.
So you're in a conversation and someone says, well, transgender athletes should be able to compete as whatever gender they identify as. What would you say? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. On February 29th, Megan Youngren made sports history, not by breaking a world record or by overcoming a particularly devastating injury. No, Youngren became the first openly transgender athlete to compete at the U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials. As is almost always the case with athletes competing across gender lines, Youngren is a biological male who attempted to make the U.S. Olympic women's team. And even though Youngren didn't make the cut, no doubt he will be the first of what will be many men who will try to seek Olympic glory by competing against women. And that means there's more than a good chance that we'll find ourselves in conversations about the fairness of biological men and women's sports. The latest in our What Would You Say video series tackles this issue. And here's just part of the latest video with Joseph Backholm's response to the question of men competing as women.
First, allowing biological males to compete with girls ignores real physical differences. Men have, on average, 36% more skeletal muscle mass than women. Men tend to be taller, and their bones are thicker and denser. Conversely, women have lower lung volume and lower airflow capacity because they have smaller lungs and airway diameter. The fastest men are faster than the fastest women. Likewise, the strongest men are stronger than the strongest women, even if they're in the same weight class. These biological realities are the reason men's and women's sports have long been separated. Which leads to the second point. Allowing boys to compete with girls denies girls the chance to compete on a level playing field. In just the last 2 years, two biological males have won 15 girls' track and field championships in Connecticut. These same two male athletes have participated in 40 qualifying events, filling slots that otherwise would have been filled by girls who are biologically female. This is happening in college also. A student at Franklin Pierce University in New Hampshire previously competed on the men's track and field team, but now competes as a female. In 2018, as a man, he placed 8th in a field of 9 in the 400-meter hurdles during a regular season meet. The following year, competing as a woman, he won the national championship in the 400-meter hurdles by 1.5 seconds. Now, we all want to be understanding, but in this case, being understanding also requires us to understand what it means for women and girls who are forced to compete against biological males for political reasons. Which leads to the third point. Allowing boys to participate in girls' sports threatens the existence of girls' sports. In the United States, sports used to be almost exclusively for boys. A federal law called Title IX was created in 1972 to make sure athletic opportunities existed for women in the same way they existed for men. This has also created athletic scholarship opportunities. 45 years ago, almost no female athletic scholarships existed. As of 2012, almost 200,000 women play college sports, many on scholarship. All of these opportunities for women and girls were created because we recognize that the physical difference between men and women shouldn't prevent women from having the opportunity to compete. In the past, it was considered misogyny when men took opportunities from women. Today, it's called equality.
That was just a brief sample of our latest What Would You Say video. Go to whatwouldyousay.org, that's whatwouldyousay.org, or catch it on YouTube. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour, the weekend is here.
Good afternoon.
Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Watching a storm system taking shape in the heartland, it's going to bring snow and thunderstorms to parts of the middle of the country. It's going to bring our area rain this weekend. Not a washout, but there could be some hefty rain for some at times. Let's talk about it in the forecast. First of all, for the afternoon, conditions will be dry. Skies clearing nicely across western and central New York for sunshine. The clearing will be more stubborn, but get eventually into Pennsylvania as the afternoon wears on. Temperatures peaking in the 40s and low 50s. Then tonight, partly cloudy skies, low temperatures 30s. Rain arrives by daybreak near Lake Erie, then spreads east by nightfall into central New York. Otherwise, it's a cloudy day tomorrow. Temperatures peaking in the mid-40s to the mid-50s. Rain and thunder tomorrow night, and then windy and warmer on Sunday with some showers and high temperatures in the 60s to near 70.
All right, Kevin Williams, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer with the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Well, fellas, strange days we are living in. I said there, what's happening at the state capitals? Is there anything at all happening in Albany, Jason? The budget deadline is fast approaching. Is the show going on there?
Well, you know, you're not seeing a lot of public activity at the Capitols. It's a lockdown, and even lobbyists and the public are not allowed into the Capitol building. But there's a lot going on behind the scenes as members are negotiating with that anticipated $178 billion budget coming down the pike by April 1st. We are hearing that the governor is still trying to put policy into the state's fiscal plan, and we're working to try to keep things like recreational marijuana out of this year's budget.
Yeah, we got to remember that that's still in session, and that deadline's fast approaching. Despite where we are with our social distancing and shutdowns, lockdowns, quarantines, whatever you want to call it, Michael, there are a flurry of legislative bills being acted upon in Harrisburg. Most of it has to do with this COVID-19, but I'll ask you the same question. Has this pretty much paralyzed the work of state government?
Well, not entirely paralyzed. Obviously, the executive branch, the governor's office and the Department of Health, et cetera, are doing the work that it needs to do related to the COVID-19. With the legislative branch, they have passed legislation that allow them to meet remotely. Some members have to show up in the Capitol, but others can be doing it remotely. So there's an interesting sort of a image I saw of a Zoom meeting of the state senators yesterday acting on some legislation there. One of the things that they've done is to put off Pennsylvania's primary election from which was scheduled for April, now is not going to happen until June.
Yeah. Wish I'd invested in Zoom stock, because I have a feeling that's going to go through the roof here soon. But Jason, it's a daily occurrence. You've got Governor Cuomo's press conferences, and then you've got the president's coronavirus task force taken to the mic. And it's every day we get these, almost it seems like, mixed messages. You're hearing one thing from President Trump in quite a different tone that you're getting from Governor Cuomo. And it's got a lot of people anxious, not knowing what to believe. Talk about that messaging problem that seems we're having in New York right now.
Yeah, you do. You see that inconsistency that's occurring. And frankly, I think there's a little politics that's going on, more than a little, with some of the different messaging. This is serious. There are concerns with coronavirus. In New York particularly, we're at the epicenter of this, and so we are seeing a different tone from Governor Cuomo than perhaps you're seeing from President Trump that's trying to calm the nation. So there's two different fronts, if you will, that are being fought, one more locally being felt more than the other. But let's not also forget that there is a political battle that's going on, that the governor is facing a likely $15 billion deficit in that budget that's due, and he is posturing to get as many dollars as he can out of the federal government. So while I think this is a serious problem, no doubt there's also some political rhetoric that's being employed to try to twist arms to get more dollars for the Empire State.
Yeah, and you know the governor knows he's got a national audience there at those daily press conferences, and he's taking full advantage of that. Governor Wolf
as well. Some have suggested that his emergency powers may have stepped over the line. There's litigation before the state Supreme Court on that front. He kind of moved first, even shutting down all the schools even before Governor Cuomo did. What are your thoughts, Michael, on the governor's emergency powers? Is he justified in taking the action that he's taken?
Well, justified in some respects, but it's been broad and sweeping in many respects in terms of the businesses that have been listed for closure. Dave Taylor, a friend of mine from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, described it as an eeny, meeny, miny, moe sort of list that didn't include some of the stakeholders that are involved. Just yesterday, I talked to a home builder who told me that his company was in the midst of rebuilding a home for someone whose home burned down, and they were nearing completion, trying to get it closed in so they could turn on the heat in there and protect the home and close it out, and the state police came by and shut them down, and he's having to appeal to the state government just to be able to finish that. When you think about the crowds that are going to grocery stores and others, a few workmen on a home site makes sense, and yet they're shut down from doing that.
Yeah, it does seem a little arbitrary. Of course, the House voted today on this $2.2 trillion coronavirus economic stimulus package. Not going to call it a bailout. Some people are calling it that, but it definitely is a lifeline to our country to kind of get us over this hump. But wanted to know how this would impact you, Jason, as a not-for-profit. I know you had to cancel your biggest fundraiser of the year recently because of COVID-19. How does this help you at all and the people you employ?
Well, I think that's the question that remains to be seen. I mean, obviously, when you cancel your biggest fundraiser of the year, there's an immediate economic hit there on our organization. But really, it's the mental state of what's going to happen with donors across the state. It's going to be reflected in what their accounts are showing. And so if the confidence is there in the market and the market comes back, then people are more willing to donate to nonprofit organizations like Michael's and myself. But if they do not, and if there is concern, and if there is fear out there, then no doubt churches and their nonprofit ministries are really going to feel the pinch this year. And so, you know, we're frankly tightening the belt and trying to prepare for whatever may come in the rest of 2020.
Yeah. Is Planned Parenthood still doing abortions today in Pennsylvania, Michael?
Sadly, yes, they are. Amazingly to most folks, but to those of us who know Planned Parenthood, not so amazingly, they are focused 100% now in Pennsylvania on abortion. They announced this week that they were stopping any services, mammograms, well, they never did mammograms, but stopping the family planning and other things that they're doing, and doing 100% abortions and staying open, using critical medical supplies and masks and respirators and other things that should be used for fighting COVID-19 to instead take life. Governor Wolf should act and should stop Planned Parenthood from doing these elective abortions.
Boy, and I tell you, with the need for all of the medical equipment, supplies, masks, all of it, I can't even believe we're even having that conversation. But that's shocking to me, and nothing really shocks me these days. Jason, you've sent out a letter to all of your supporters talking about the strategic moment that this pandemic presents the church. Explain a little bit what you mean by that.
Well, I think we're at an interesting moment in church history, in American church history, where the church needs to really just look up and say, what is God doing at this moment, and how can I align with that? You know, we have churches that only 2-3 weeks ago still were not live streaming. They were hesitant to get involved in online outreach, those types of things. And overnight, it has just, there's been a shift that has occurred. And now churches that were not online before are seeing 4 times or 5 times. I heard from one church that it is 20 times their viewership through their online services than were occurring on their Sunday morning services physically in the building. Now, I miss the fellowship of being with other believers, but I am thankful and grateful for the fact that there are people that are tuning in who do not know the Lord Jesus Christ that are seeing these types of devotions and messages across the web. God is doing something despite this, and believers need to ask themselves, what is it, and how can I be a part of that?
Yeah. You know, the president, Michael, likes to say the cure can't be worse than the disease, and to me, that's the one thing I look at is when we're Monday morning quarterbacking this, whenever that is, you begin to wonder, is there any silver lining here? Jason mentioned what's happening with the online churches and just the explosion. I've seen friends of mine who I never thought would come to a saving knowledge of Christ, and it's just amazing to see that. But you've had to cancel your March for Life, and which was a huge huge event, not cancel, postpone. You had to postpone that, which was huge. And you know, nobody wants to do these kinds of things. It's not American to shut down. But what would you say is the silver lining in this national emergency that we're all struggling through?
Well, number one, a lot of families are getting together and spend time together that they didn't have before. Moms and dads connecting with their children in ways that they haven't before. We're discovering things about each other. So that's one of the things. And then the other one that you just mentioned, Bob, through this crisis, people are coming much more into the reality of their own mortality. When you have a pandemic and you see death tolls, people start thinking about, where am I going to go? What happens if I die? Yeah. And that presents a wonderful opportunity for sharing the gospel and spreading the love and the opportunity that God gives for all to have eternal life through Jesus Christ.
Amen. There's no better way to end the show than with that thought. But if you want to learn more about the great work going on at the Pennsylvania Family Institute, Michael, where can they find you?
PAFamily.org.
And stay informed on the issues in Albany as well. Jason, what's your website, sir?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
Great job as usual. They make it look easy. It's called Capital Connection. Comes your way every Friday during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Watching a storm system taking shape in the heartland, it's going to bring snow and thunderstorms to parts of the middle of the country. It's going to bring our area rain this weekend. Not a washout, but there could be some hefty rain for some at times. Let's talk about it in the forecast. First of all, for the afternoon, conditions will be dry. Skies clearing nicely across western and central New York for sunshine. The clearing will be more stubborn, but get eventually into Pennsylvania as the afternoon wears on. Temperatures peaking in the 40s and low 50s. Then tonight, partly cloudy skies, low temperatures 30s. Rain arrives by daybreak near Lake Erie, then spreads east by nightfall into central New York. Otherwise, it's a cloudy day tomorrow. Temperatures peaking in the mid-40s to the mid-50s. Rain and thunder tomorrow night, and then windy and warmer on Sunday with some showers and high temperatures in the 60s to near 70.
All right, Kevin Williams, have yourself a great weekend. Finally, this Friday, cleaning can also lead to coping during these challenging times. Once again at noon, Family Life's Bob Price.
Yeah, physically cleaning and organizing your home can help get the blood flowing, and it releases endorphins, a chemical in the brain that makes you feel good. Dr. Richard Blackford with Associated Counseling Services says there are multiple studies that show a correlation between clean living spaces and good mental health. Decreased clutter, he says, helps improve concentration and in some people actually acts as sort of an antidepressant. Experts say with the warmer weather on the way, spending time outside in the sunshine should also help you cope with the coronavirus. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Good stuff. Thank you, Bob. That is the world we live in this Friday. Thanks for coming along. Have a safe and happy weekend. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.